We're going to go through this article, starting on page 11, article by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati about Putana. And for our test, which is on Wednesday, isn't it? We're going to ask you some questions about this. How many of you have read this essay on Putana, starting on page 11? One, two, three, four, five, a few, six. Okay, so I'll read through it and try and explain it as well as I can as we go. Putana, as we read, Putana represents the pseudo-guru, which may be either a person who's acting, trying to put themselves forward as being some sort of guru or spiritual authority. It may also be the mind. People are very much prone to be directed by their minds. The mind decides, what are my goals in life and what directions I should take in my life. What's important in my life. Actually, these things should really be decided by a bona fide guru, but generally the power of attorney is given to the mind. And as a result, people end up in all sorts of unfortunate, calamitous positions. So I think Putana is one of the very important demons, or the anatha that she represents, is one of the very important anathas to understand, so I thought we'd read through this here. Now, if you just glance through, it starts at the bottom of page 11, goes through page 12 and 13, and finishes on page 14. You'll see it at different places through the text. I've written in point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to 8. So the article itself, of course, is written by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta or alternatively edited by. The points which I've extracted, and then I listed them out, in fact, on page 14. I hope it's clear exactly how it's working. On page 11, you'll see there, point 1. Then it says, points extracted by the teacher of this course, not by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Then on page 14, it says, points from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's article, and there is point 1. Kamsa, the chief materialist in the form of aggressive empiricism, likes to suppress the truth before it has time to develop. He has an innate dislike for anything spiritual. So that little bit that I just read is like a brief summary of what is being explained starting on page 11 from where it says point 1. It's that paragraph there, point 1, up to where you see on the top of, towards the top of page 12, it says point 2. It's a little summary. And then on page 12, we have point 2, and if you look on page 14, number 2, is just a brief summary of those few paragraphs there which are under point 2 on page 12. That Kamsa is associated with like-minded people, including lexicographers, those who uphold dictionary definitions of subjects that are transcendental to dictionaries. And he engages these lexicographers to put down Krishna consciousness at its earliest stage. So that is coming from me, that summary. It's just what I feel is the main points being made here in point 2 in the actual text itself. Is that clear? Anyone who doesn't understand what I mean by that? Okay, so let's assume everyone does. Now we'll read through. the article starting on page 11. Here the author is drawing a parallel between the birth of Lord Krishna, or the appearance of Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago, and how a person becomes Krishna conscious to start off with, or comes into contact with Krishna consciousness and then just makes a little start in Krishna consciousness. So in this article he begins by saying that Krishna manifests his eternal birth in the pure cognitive essence of the serving soul, who's located above all mundane limitations. In other words, Krishna, of course, Krishna made his appearance in the prison house of Kamsa. Or Krishna consciousness, which is not different from Krishna. Krishna, when a person initially contacts Krishna consciousness and takes to Krishna consciousness, it's as if Krishna takes his birth in the heart or in the consciousness of the aspiring devotee. You follow the idea there? So this parallel is being drawn. Now, of course, when Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, Kamsa was on guard. He was waiting to be alerted for when this little child appears, and then he was going to jump straight in and kill Krishna. So similarly, Kamsa, the typical aggressive empiricist, or in other words, the chief of materialists, presiding deity of materialism, he's always on the lookout for people who are becoming Krishna conscious. He's on the lookout for the appearance of Krishna consciousness anywhere in his domain. And if Krishna consciousness ever does appear, then he wants to jump in and stamp it out. Just like we had the experience in Russia and those areas back some years. Of course, times have changed now, but back, say, 10 years ago or so, the government, and they were really like these very aggressive empiricists, aggressive materialists, they were always on the lookout. Where are their people practicing Krishna consciousness? And by all sorts of underhanded means, like through espionage, it was as if they thought Krishna consciousness was some real subversive danger, like a menacing threat in their society. Really. Actually, they thought it was like that. You probably heard that back in those days, one leading Russian said that there are three things which are the biggest threats to our Soviet empire, our communist empire. Blue jeans, rock and roll music, and the Hare Krishnas. So they thought like that. And we might think, you know, how on earth could they think like that? But they did. Why? Because they're like that. They're like Kamsas. They're really demons. And they're actually on the lookout. And they have their spies out. Watch out for Krishna consciousness. And if they ever got a little hint that some person might be engaged in Krishna consciousness, immediately they'd sweep in with machine guns, and it was just like they were confronting some major criminals. So, King Kamsa, or the, when we say empiricist means a person who evaluates things in terms of his sensual, direct sensual perception. And all his, like, evaluations, all his ideas, all his concepts that he has, is all coming from his direct sensual experience. Like the scientists, they want to see that something is there before they'll admit it, supposedly. So that is empiricism. That one that one is convinced that truth can only be understood via the senses. Seeing is believing, that type of idea. So Kamsa, or the staunch materialists, they're always on the lookout for Krishna consciousness, and they want to put it down before it has time to develop. Just like Kamsa in Mathura, he wanted to jump in and kill Krishna before Krishna had time to grow up. And then he says, this is no exaggeration. We shouldn't think that he's being excessively critical. This is no exaggeration of the consistent empiric position, or the person who is quite convinced that you must perceive things through your senses, and that's the only way you can come to any conclusions or make any evaluations on anything, evaluations which are of any value. So such materialists have a natural repugnance for the transcendental because of their demoniac state of mind. It naturally follows. It's like a factor of their materialistic consciousness, their materialistic attitudes. A factor of it all is that they naturally become antagonistic towards transcendental subjects. It just follows. Not just follows, but it's part of it. It's part of their materialistic mentality. And he thinks that faith in the incomprehensible, because generally spiritual philosophy is talking about things which are beyond this world to some extent, spiritual things, and we're in a material condition now, so these are transcendental subjects. So he thinks that faith in such things which from the material point of view are incomprehensible is the parent of dogmatism, which is followed by hypocrisy. Because it's incomprehensible, he thinks that it's meaningless. We talk about a God, but where is he? I don't see any God. He's the empiricist. I don't see God, so I don't accept him. He doesn't exist. So if you say he exists, you're just being dogmatic. Dogmatic means you're insisting on something, that something is true, but you have no proof, you can't prove it. That is dogmatism. And then what follows from such dogmatism? Hypocrisy. Because it's all based on something which is unreal, so whatever follows from that must be hypocritical. Can't be genuine. But in the guise of religion. So they think that religion, as one great materialist said, religion is the opiate of the people. Mr. Marx, in his Das Kapital, said a religion is the opiate of the people. It's like a drug. Just slows them down, stops them really thinking about getting ahead in life and doing things, positive things, because they are believing in this God, this non-existent God, and they are depending on him rather than making efforts themselves. So they think that this is all just nonsense, hypocrisy, dogmatism, completely detrimental. And therefore it follows that he's under the delusion. He thinks there's no dividing line between the material and the spiritual. Or in other words, he doesn't think there is anything spiritual. Prabhupada made the point, it's in one purport, I think in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that if a person tries to practice Krishna consciousness independent of the association of devotees, actually Prabhupada says in the purport, independent of ISKCON, so independent of the association of devotees, then his so-called Krishna consciousness will simply be a hallucination. And Prabhupada says that his spiritual activities will not become distinct from his material activities. In other words, he won't really be able to become situated firmly in spiritual practice. His efforts in spiritual life will always be mixed up with very strong material influence. like, he may think he's being very spiritual. I mean, this is just to give a graphic example. Person is trying supposedly to be very spiritual, but because he's not in the association of devotees and he's not getting that spiritual influence from the association of devotees, so you may think that to be spiritual you should give charity to the poor people. This is very spiritual. So his attempts in spiritual life are not actually becoming distinct from materialism. You follow the idea? Yeah? Okay. So now Kamsa, he's the chief. He's the head of the materialists. He's the patron of materialism and the, like, the founder Acharya or something. But he can't do it all himself. So he has a team working under him. He's strengthened in his delusion by the interpretation of scriptures by persons who are like-minded with himself. And this includes all the lexicographic, something like that, interpreters. Lexicographical means a strict dictionary meaning. So he's assisted, the chief materialist becomes the patron, actually, of materialistic pseudo-spiritual intellectuals who give all their analyses of what is religion and what is spiritual life and what it's all about in very sort of high-sounding terms, because they're big intellectuals. But because they're materialistic and lexicographic, it's all very twisted. Like, just to give an example, we read that God, it says actually in Brahma Samhita, what is it? Adyam Puranam Purusham. Adyam, is it? Adyam Puranam Purusham Navayovanamcha. So Adyam Puranam Purusham means the original and oldest person. So these lexicographic interpreters, they'll give their interpretation in strict dictionary terms. They'll say, yes, all right, the original oldest person, this is God, Krishna. That means he must be very old. He must look like some totally antiquated fossil who got put in the old age home 200 years ago and somehow has managed to survive to today. Isn't it? God, some haggard old man who's just about holding on. They'll think like this. Or, God is the oldest. I mean, God is the strongest. So they think, oh yes, strongest. Must have big muscles. Like Atlas, holding up the earth, struggling to hold it. So, in various ways then they interpret scripture. They're being patronized by Kamsa, so they're very careful to interpret in such ways which will suit him. Like, there was this book written by that, I think, was he a rabbi or something? Hari Krishna. Why do bad things happen to good people? So he's one of these intellectual, so-called religious intellectuals. He's trying to figure out how come bad things happen to people who at least on the surface appear good, like innocent little babies and people who generally by material standards are not too bad, but they end up in disastrous situations sometimes. So of course he's not aware of what is reincarnation and that in the previous or some previous lives a person, today's innocent little, apparently innocent little baby, in his last lifetime, he was Adolf Hitler. So why are bad things happening to him now? Well, it's not so hard to understand when you consider it from that point of view. So, anyway, he wasn't aware of things like that. He was just thinking in terms of this life. So he couldn't figure out. why do bad things happen to good people? So he tried to interpret. And his interpretation was that God is very nice. He's very nice. He's just completely nice. And when he created this creation, he had a very nice idea in mind that we could all just live so happily and it'd just be wonderful. But after a little while, despite all the best intentions, God lost control. He's still there, and we can worship him. It's not too bad. I mean, he's a good chap. But he just can't handle what's going on, and as a result, there's so much chaos. This was his interpretation. So people like that get patronized by materialists, and they get grants for doing research and publishing books and so on. But the idea is actually to encourage or perpetrate this materialism in the name of religion. So that was point one then, and we had said that... Anyway, yeah, that's point one. Sort of coincides with what I said on page 14 to some extent. Now, point two. Well, it's continuing the same theme about these lexicographers and they're being encouraged by Kamsa and how they conduct themselves. So, of course, this interpretation, this lexicographic interpretation, is upheld by the big materialists as being the real scientific explanation of the scriptures, just like we have or had in this country up till a few years ago. The government was, if I'm not mistaken, officially Christian or officially Roman Dutch or whatever is it, Dutch Reformed?
Christian nationalist.
Or something, is it? So they have their interpretation. I mean, they had various interpretations, I think. You'd all know some of them, which were rather, you know, just really concocted to suit their political ideas. So the Kamsas, they're sponsoring all this, isn't it? The government was sponsoring those churches, giving them so much money and so many facilities. It's quite amazing how they were helping them. Because that church was sort of, through their sermons and all that, was encouraging the political views of the government. So things like this go on. Kamsa, he tries to push this idea, encourage the idea by patronizing these lexicographers, that this is the real idea. This is the real religious idea. And it's actually in keeping with his dread of things which are truly transcendental. They didn't really appreciate us that much. They sort of tolerated us because they had to. But they didn't encourage us. So these interpreters are employed by Kamsa. The big materialists, they actually employ these people to suppress the real truth of spiritual philosophy. Because he knows that if it's allowed to grow a bit, then it'll spread, because it's a very powerful thing, Krishna consciousness, very powerful thing. If it gets in, it starts to spread. Prabhupada made the comment once that in America they were trying to suppress book distribution and suppress the movement generally. So Prabhupada made the point that this was after the movement had been active for some years. He said that it's too late. It's too late. What did he call them? Anyway, I forget the exact terminology that he used. But he said, the books are already there. They've already gone out. So it's too late. Krishna consciousness has already been implanted in the American society. So even if they try to suppress the movement now, it's too late. Because it's such a powerful thing, it'll just keep coming up. So then second paragraph here in point two. He has grounds for being afraid like that. In other words, it's happened in the past. Krishna consciousness has appeared from time to time, and when it has appeared, it's made a big impact. So he doesn't want that to happen again. So he feels he shouldn't lose a moment to put down this transcendental so-called heresy the instant it threatens to appear. So the materialists, the big materialists, are thinking like that. And Kamsa was thinking like that himself, waiting for Krishna to appear. So he's never slow, Kamsa and those who are like him today. They're never slow in taking the precaution of deputing teachers, having a whole army of teachers to preach these fallacious pseudo-spiritual philosophies, backed by all sorts of resources. So many resources. Just like I saw, I think it was last year or the year before, the Bible Society, which is one of these government-sponsored institutions, sponsored to the terms of I don't know how many millions of rands annually. They were given, I think, a whole day on television when they did some sort of marathon of getting books sponsored. I think it was the entire day. I saw a little bit of it. They didn't pay a cent. You know, it's probably worth, I don't know, thousands, millions of rands of exposure on television. Bibliothon, right. Right. So anyway, they're there, these teachers with all their specious arguments on hypothetical principles, like that. Kamsa's quite convinced, this is the third paragraph, quite convinced that he'll be successful if he acts quickly enough. And he thinks that the failure of atheism in the past, when confronted with the appearance of Krishna consciousness, that the failure of atheism in the past was due to the fact that they didn't act quickly enough and crush it, Krishna consciousness, quickly enough. So he doesn't want to make that fatal mistake again. But Krishna is greater than Kamsa, and Krishna is quite able to upset the plans of the Kamsas. So therefore, just from one man, Srila Prabhupada, 30 years ago, this movement has spread on such a large scale. Quite amazing. Because once Krishna consciousness gets in, then it's of such a nature that it keeps manifesting and growing. So, point three. This is quite interesting. How it all works. So now, Putana. Putana is one of these main assistants of Kamsa, the pseudo-guru, the pseudo-spiritual teacher, is the slayer of all infants. Soon as the baby is born, the baby falls into the hands of the Putanas. Even though devotees may be there, but still, the Putanas step in right at the time of the baptism of the babies. And from that point, they take over as these spiritual mentors of the people, right from the point of their birth. And this is ensured. The success of the Putanas is ensured by the arrangements of all the established churches of the world. Now, of course, this article is in English, and in those days, we're talking about early 1930s, English was only the language of white people. There weren't really no other people who used English. But, so he's speaking in English, so it's kind of aim towards European people. But we could, where he's saying here, established churches, we could take it that the established religious, popular religious institutions of the world, who have great vested interests in being supported and maintaining their support and maintaining their control over those who are supporting them. So all these established popular religious institutions, they are very concerned to see that the Putanas are successful. Unfortunately, these established institutions have been successful practically only